kraken gaat door, which means squatting will go on, will continue. Even if it's prohibited, we will continue because we don't have any other choice. It's our right of housing and also our right of our initiative to create these autonomous spaces, which are very hard to realize on a legal basis. Because it's too expensive, there's all kind of regulations, etc., that you have to deal with that make it impossible to start a social center without anyone. And squatting, of course, makes this possible, which is the beautiful thing about it.
But all of our friends who still live in Het Kraken, which is what it's called in Nederland, they all anticipate that they're going to lose their housing. And, you know, there isn't enough housing to go around.
Necessary also to mobilize the international brigades, so to speak, and stick together again, as we have done before in different countries, because we look beyond borders or nations, and we'll always try to fight together for these kind of important facilities that we gained and that we fought for.
As of October 1st, 2010, squatting is illegal in the Netherlands. As an answer to the new eviction policy, roughly 1,000 squatters and sympathizers demonstrated on the 1st of October in Amsterdam. Out of the demonstration, a house got squatted, and the group remained for a while to support and celebrate this first so-called illegal squatting action. They hung many banners, one of which said, "With hollow laws, you cannot fill empty houses." Tonight on Circulate Radio, we will talk with Sana, who has lived in her squat in Amsterdam for the past 7 years, and with Lisa Loving, Portland area journalist, KBOO volunteer, and former squatter in Amsterdam. Stay tuned. We start with Sana talking about how the squatting ban was passed into law in December of 2009. This interview took place on October 17th.
Since it's like the fourth or the fifth time that this squatting ban was tried, I think for us it was also a bit like, oh yeah, again, you know, we've had several campaigns against this, and we were campaigning against this squatting ban, and noticed that this time it might be a bit different. There might be a small majority of votes. The strange situation in which we were was that even though this new squatting ban was proposed by some of the, like the Christian Democrat Party and the right wing neoliberal party, most of the politicians and mayors of bigger cities and even the police department was against this law. It was being criticized not only by us, because it was obviously not a solution for the housing problems still have an instrument for owners to be able to speculate more with their buildings, etc. But also it was criticized upon by the mayors of the big cities who claimed it was a completely unnecessary law, that squatters weren't such a big problem to them, and it was a good way of forcing the owner to do something with their building. High persons in the police force were against the law because they said they'd rather spend their time going after real criminals, and they didn't really see the use of squatting ban. And so there were quite interesting critiques on this law from sides that you would not expect. Overall, many of the people in power at that moment found it quite unnecessary law, and kind of a symbolic law, a law that's saying, like, now we have to take ownership serious. We have to make an end to this practice where people themselves autonomously decide to occupy a building or to liberate a building, however you want to call it, against the wish of the owner. And we have to put the ownership right again as a priority above the housing right. And this was always been the other way around. Of course, this right-wing forces had different principles. It's more about the principle, I would say, than that practice was that disturbing. And it's more something every right-wing conservative person is annoyed with squatting. Then they took their chance to create this law and I shouldn't forget to tell that the PVV, which is the Party for Freedom, the most right-wing party of the Netherlands at the moment, very popular Islamophobic party from Geert Wilders, that might be known in the United States as well, because he was there to speak at Ground Zero and is very popular with, for example, the Tea Party, etc. And this party, the PVV, was actually thinking of not voting in favor of the law. They said, of course, we want a ban on squatting. That's our biggest wish. But the punishment stated in the law is too low for us. We want it higher. So the rest of the parties creating this law changed their proposition, and they doubled the prison sentence. And then they could get also the votes of the PVV, and then the law came through. In Holland, you get in every country, when this law is actually voted for, it's not the moment when it's also implemented or when it starts to work. So this was the 1st of October, and of course already before the 1st of October there were several actions at the parliament, squatting actions that were pointing out the necessity of squatting, and a general campaign, I would say, to show that squatting is still necessary and important, and that it will go on. This was also the message, kraken gaat door, which means squatting will go on, will continue. Even if it's prohibited, we will continue because we don't have any other choice. It's our right of housing and also our right of our initiative to create these autonomous spaces, which are very hard to realize on a legal basis because it's too expensive. There's all kind of regulations, etc., that you have to deal with that make it impossible to start a social center without anyone. And squatting, of course, makes this possible, which is the beautiful thing about it. There has been demonstrations with thousands of people. There has been a variety of some creative actions. There was an action where the Queen gave her royal palace, which is in Amsterdam, it's also kind of empty, not in use building, gave it back to the people and said, like, I support the squatters because we support this right of housing. So there were a lot of different actions, which also got quite some media attention. But of course, this can't stop this law because it was already voted for.
We jump ahead to September of 2010, when the mayor of Amsterdam announced he would rush to implement the law as soon as possible, while other mayors around the Netherlands were talking about ignoring it.
The mayor of Amsterdam stating that he was really going to implement the law, that he was going to evict, that he was going to start evicting from the 1st of October, and that there was no question about it. He also stated that there were three categories. First, he would evict the squats who had been causing any kind of trouble for the neighbors or in any way trouble to the authorities, I would say. And secondly, he would evict the squats that there were plans for, building plans, for example, or demolition plans. And thirdly, he would evict the other squats. And so creating some kind of category system, it's a practical thing for him to do. And it's also quite smart, because if you first evict squats that are in some way causing trouble, for example, for the neighbors, the first eviction round will get a lot of media attention. And then if all the neighbors say to the press, like, oh, we're so happy, the squatters are out, you know, then this is good footed for the mayor. And then later on, the attention will be a bit less, I guess, for evictions. And then that's the time when the more interesting squats will get evicted, who have a better story and more support from the people as well. So, yeah, this kind of caused a shock among the squatters in Amsterdam, because not out of any arrogance, but just because Amsterdam is mostly the most liberal city of Holland and less repressive and more tolerant in many ways, especially in policy and in police practice. We kind of expected it would be the other way around, that, for example, a city like The Hague, who is known for a very repressive police, a very strict policy, always very strict implementation of rules around demonstrations and whatnot, also with a quite small movement of squatters, and also the only city where PVV, this Islamophobic party of Geert Wilders, is in the city council. And our city, Amsterdam, is ruled by the Social Democrats. So you would kind of expect it the other way around. But no, Amsterdam is the only city that has said till now, like, we are going to implement the law and we're going to evict every squat. For us, this was a declaration of war, basically, from this new mayor. And there was a demonstration plan for the 1st of October, a very well-organized, very nice demonstration. And from the demonstration, we squatted a house, which was the first house that was squatted after this new law was implemented. It was an action squat, as we call it, which means that it's not necessarily a squat where people will really live, more symbolic squatting action. Of course, the building is empty, but it's more to show, like, look, there's an empty building, we're going to squat it. And, well, then we see what happens, because we kind of expected it would be evicted immediately. But it didn't happen because the demonstration was big enough and we were strong enough also to keep the police out of the demonstration. This was very nice. There were, I think, like about 1,000 people, which is nowadays quite a good number of people for any demonstration here. Then after this squatting action from the demonstration was on its way to its end point, and then the police attacked the demonstration, which is also quite interesting because this also doesn't happen that much in Holland. Of course, police is often attacking demonstrations in some way, but it's always after they gave this warning saying that you are disturbing public order and you have to leave the premises, and if you don't leave the premises, violence will be used against you. And they give these three warnings. They're obligatory warnings from the police, and then they charge the demonstration and try to divide it or disperse it most of the time. But this was a very unlikely or very not often seen situation where the police just bluntly attacked the demonstration, police horses first. Then people defended themselves, and there were some fireworks thrown, which kind of made the horses freak out and run away. And then the riot police started to really very violently hit into the protesters. And then, yeah, of course, people started to defend themselves. And it was a quite militant demonstration. And you can really tell that people are, after this declaration of the mayor saying, I'm going to evict every squat and there's a law now and I have to implement it, people are really, really, really angry, and they're really willing to show that we won't just go without a fight, and we will take action and we will squat. The squatting will continue, but we will also not go without a fight. This is interesting because squatting was so, we were so used to the fact that it was kind of had this semi-legal status. I guess you also get a bit spoiled from that or lazy in a way. And now people are getting really woke up and are really organizing a lot of actions, demonstrations. People are investing again more into the infrastructure that we have built up, which makes squatting in Amsterdam, for example, such a successful practice, because we have all these squat groups that help other people squat, but we also have alarm lists in case a squat is under some kind of threat. We can call this alarm list, and then within 15 minutes to half an hour, there's like 40, 50, 60 people ready to help out. We used to have very often these citywide meetings, these countrywide meetings of squatters. It didn't happen so often anymore. People didn't see the urgency of that. But now it's all coming back. And also some divisions that were created or were trying to be created by the press, saying there's the good squatters and the bad squatters, the violent squatters and the responsible squatters. Now you see people really sticking together again, which is, yeah, often what happens when a group is under threat. That's quite positive to see, actually, because it's such a diverse group of people squatting. People have really different reasons also for squatting. Some really don't have any money. Some people have difficulties organizing their lives in this over-regulated society. Some people really need the freedom of having certain kind of spaces but can't afford it. Some people are very politically motivated, and et cetera, et cetera. So you have this really wide range of people squatting, mothers with children, so to speak, and really young punks. There's almost everything and everything in between. And it's really interesting to see how people are sticking together now and are really trying to create a movement again from something that was kind of turning into more like a scene. Last Thursday, we had a citywide meeting, and it was very successful. And yeah, everybody's quite positive about the idea that we should really be careful not to be divided into individual squads, but really have some kind of common strategy.
You are listening to an interview with Sana, a squatter in Amsterdam, on Circle A Radio. She now tells us a little about the history of squatting.
Squatting has been a very famous and long practice in the Netherlands, and it was a very successful social movement. Squatting as a political movement actually started in the 60s when people started to organize squatting actions with a political story around it, about housing, about the shortage of housing, about the fact that there were a lot of houses empty, but people couldn't get a place to live on the official way. Before that, people were already squatting, but more like silent squatting. The word for squatting in Dutch is kraken. That wasn't even used back then, that word. So it was that clandestinely living in a house. And then some people decided that they could maybe be stronger if they organized together and started really do it on an organized collective way. And then they started the housing agency, The Squatter, which was very popular and a broad, very broad, diverse part of the people in cities especially, but also in small towns, started squatting actually as a way to get a house, because it was so difficult to do this officially and there were so many empty buildings. And then squatting also has always been a movement not only very important as a social struggle for housing and to put social housing on the agenda, but also in cases of renovation of areas, for example, where a lot of good houses are demolished for big office projects or whatnot, and as a collective protest against these kind of restructuring programs, which were often not in the interest of the people at all, but more for companies or the rich. Really a big part of the historical inner city is still there because squatters protested against the demolition of historical areas of the city and also against the gentrification of the city. Amsterdam has always been, and the Netherlands in general, has been like quite good, decent social housing, which was fought for by the squatters, among others. So that's the situation. And then in the 60s, it started as organized social movements. In the 80s, it's still quite big. There's whole areas being squatted. There's a whole infrastructure being built up with squats. It's not only about housing, but it came also more about gaining right to autonomously use a space a certain way and making social centers. You had like a squatted vegetable store, squatted cafes, squatted daycare centers that all were based on the idea that you take your life in your own hands and gain more autonomy about the way you would like to run, for example, a vegetable shop, and not with like huge profits, not in a capitalist way, so to speak. This gained more popularity in the 80s. This alternative infrastructure was also very important for the city and for people to realize how they could actually organize their lives themselves and not be dependent on governmental structures or company structures. And there was a big scene or movement with a lot of solidarity, and needs were fulfilled by that movement in different ways. So this was a very special atmosphere, and this people in Amsterdam remember squatting like this until the last, let's say, like 5 years, there's been kind of a change in the mood around squatting. It got more marginalized, and you saw also the public opinion change a bit, but it was mostly the politics and the politicians and the police trying to also change this image about squatters. It's part of a general more conservative and right-wing wind in the Netherlands. And squatting is naturally part of it, since it disrespects ownership for the right for housing. And now we see a squat ban since the 1st of October. It's weird because it's been such a popular practice and such a basic part, I would say, of Holland That was one of the countries where we found this kind of gap in the law, and it was kind of tolerated that people squatted houses, because most of the time even the government realized that in a country like Holland, which is so densely populated and there's such a huge shortage of housing for people, especially people in marginalized situations or like students and poor people, it's very hard to get affordable housing, even though there is a lot of social housing, but the system got kind of stuck and it's just overfilled. And still there's empty buildings and owners that don't do anything with them. So even the government and the mayors and those in power realized that in this situation the right of housing was more important at that moment than the ownership right, because the owner obviously didn't do anything with this house and with this scarce need of people, and therefore the government kind of tolerated that people squatted a house for the time being, and then when the owner would have a plan, he could go to court to get squatters out. And most of the time, of course, the court decides for the owner that the owner has the right to get the squatters out. This was the practice for, well, since the 60s, actually, and now this has changed.
That was Sanne, a squatter in Amsterdam. Next up, we hear from Lisa Loving, a Portland-area journalist and radio producer who has done a lot of writing about her experience living in a squat in Amsterdam. She begins by telling us how her family decided to move to Amsterdam.
In the mid-90s, my husband, who's a vaudeville performer, his name is David Lichtenstein, he's Leapin' Louis Lichtenstein, the most explosive Lithuanian Jewish cowboy ever to come out of Northeast Portland, is his act. And we had always wanted to live overseas, and we had two little kids. We figured this would be the best time before the kids started school. So he's got friends all over the world, performing friends all over the world. And there is a kind of a jet-setting community of vaudevillians that, you know, probably a lot of people don't realize that. I really wanted to be someplace where it would be easy for me to get by without learning a whole other language immediately. This was 12 years ago or so, 14 years ago. And we had a ton of friends in Amsterdam. We also had friends in Paris, southern France, and Belgium, and Japan. But when we sort of surveyed our friends, you know, where people emigrate to, it's true, is where you have friends who will let you sleep on their floor. So that's how we ended up in Amsterdam, because our best friends there really welcomed us with open arms. So this was in 1996. We first landed there with our little kids, my daughter, I think she was 3, and my son, I think, was 4 and a half, Layla and James. To be honest with you, Amsterdam, it's one of my favorite cities of the world. It's beautiful, and the people are intelligent, and the structures of society, riding your bike everywhere. It was so much easier to get by there. So we went to Europe in 96, but it wasn't that easy to find a place to live. Actually, the Netherlands per capita is one of the most crowded countries on earth. So there really was no place to live in Amsterdam at all. We ended up buying a camper van that we called Beethoven and traveling around for about a year trying to find a place to live. And then we had this opportunity to move into a squat in Amsterdam. We just rushed to it. And a lot of people think of squatting as being, you know, it's an anarchist movement. But anarchism and chaos are not the same thing. There was, I'm sure there still is, a council of squatters who organized together and helped make decisions about where the properties are going to go, right? So there was this property, it was a Balthaus, a bathhouse tower, and an acquaintance of ours, he had this property. But to be honest with you, you know, when you look at squatting again, you think of squatters as being maybe a bunch of stoned hippie type people, but they're not. You know, Amsterdam people, even the stoned hippie type people, are very all about business. And this guy, his name was Ton. He brought us in because he had this space and he wanted to, you had to take care of it. You couldn't just let anyone live there. So he offered it to us because we'd known him for a year. And then he and I and David went before the Squatters Council to petition for us to live there. Okay. Ton had created this squat 10 years earlier. He and his wife at the time, who was a French woman, they had created this squat in the mid-1980s. And so the council approved it, and we moved in. We lived there for a year. And to be honest with you, I loved it. It didn't have any running water at first. I'm going to stop saying people have wrong ideas about squatting. You had to be able to, you had to be a little bit Martha Stewart. You had to have a Leatherman tool. You had to be about business. You had to know, you had to have an attorney, right? In Amsterdam, in the system that was just abolished, I suppose, you couldn't have a squat without having an attorney. You couldn't have a squat without having an interaction with the police department. Because, I mean, the way it worked is that if a property had been empty for a minimum of 1 year, you would go in, you would establish, well, what is it? It's a table, a bed, and a chair, and a padlock. And then you would go get the police and bring them back. And they would witness that and make a notation of it. It's a very, it wasn't just a casual, oh, we're going to break in the back window and go in there and smoke out with our sleeping bags on the floor kind of thing at all, right? And many people, if you had a good attorney and if you totally brought up the property and improved the property, you could get it legalized. We have a lot of friends who lived in legalized squats and got their property legalized. And it's not just places to live either, any kind of a structure, any kind of a building. We had friends who moved into a 400-year-old townhouse right by Dumb Square that, like, you know, the property owner hadn't even put a key in the lock for years. They spent 2 years just scraping the pigeon detritus off the floor, right? And they turned it into a club. They turned it into a vaudeville club with stainless steel kitchen and all this stuff. But that was back in 97. And I tell you what, even then, right, that landowner looked at all the work that our friends and the money that they put into that building, and he figured out a way with his attorney to get the building back. So there have been loopholes all this time. And these building owners, they were able to look at people and see what they were doing and play this cat and mouse game to, it's in their interest to let somebody else put that effort in there to keep a building from falling down and then get it back if they can. So that's why, you know, in my mind, I look at squatting as it's like a process. It's like a phase in urban development. This was just in Amsterdam, but for me, and I've done a bit of research on just the history of squatting. Squatting has happened everywhere. Squatting happened during caveman days, right? So, you know, and people can talk about their ideas about what's legal and property rights and whatnot. But in Europe, in the Western world, right after World War II, there were these huge squatted areas, whole squatted neighborhoods. There was this really famous and tragic case in Ireland where, you know, after the war, there were whole neighborhoods that were abandoned. I mean, there were places that were bombed out. And again, process of urban renewal or whatever, there weren't enough places for people to live. And as human beings, you have to have a place to live. It's one of those three things that you have to have, right? So in this case, after World War II in Ireland, a whole bunch of families went into this neighborhood that was entirely abandoned, and parts of it had been bombed and burned. And they went in, they fixed it up, and so I don't even remember who was in charge in this village. It was in a village, but the village sent police in there. And I feel like this was in 1946 or 48. And they actually killed some of these people to try to dislodge them. And it was all families. I mean, and I think that that's another thing that you're going to find around the world when it comes to squatting. A lot of kids, a lot of families involved, because you have to have a place to live. When you look at squatting, like the history of it, again, it's something that starts because there's a lot of people that don't have any place to live, and there's underutilized property. Properties owned by somebody. Actually, quite a few of these Amsterdam properties had been owned, such as the Badhuis where we lived. It had been owned by the city. Part of it is like the process of people defaulting on their property ownership, and it costs money to upkeep a building. It costs money. That's how whole tracts of property end up being abandoned. And you know, we saw that here in Portland as well, in Northeast Portland, back in the early 90s, when me and my family first moved to Northeast Portland. There were estimated something like 1,000 derelict properties just in Northeast Portland. And a lot of it had been because of this venture capital company that had acquired these properties, and they were laundering money through it. And you can see how You know, and with Amsterdam too, when you look at squatting as a movement, all these properties, somebody lived in them before. Never do I hear people say, what happened to the people that lived here before? Because a lot of the times there's something squirrely behind how big amounts of the city property ended up being derelict in the first place.
That was Lisa Loving, Portland journalist and author of the blog Martha Stewart Squatting, which you can find on Tumblr. This is Circle A Radio, produced at your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Tonight, we are focusing on the squatting ban that went into effect in the Netherlands on October 1st. We are also talking about the resistance to the ban and the history of squatting. We return to our interview with Lisa Loving, KBOO volunteer, local writer, and former squatter.
Ton, when we first moved in, Ton said to me, don't ever let anybody in with a badge. Never let anybody in with a badge. Just tell them no. But I forgot what he said, and I let somebody in with a badge, and it was a city inspector who came in to read the gas meter. And the way the city got us out, or the way that the city dislodged the squat was, they said that whoever lived in that place was behind in their gas payments. And they demanded this astrological amount of money, and no one had it. They did turn off the gas, right, which powered the heat in the squat. And that was really like the major thing that spelled the end of the squat overall, because we could carry in water, but you can't carry up gas and pour it into the heater, right? So that was a pretty big faux pas. I felt terrible about it. That squat is gone also. And I think it's been like maybe 5 or 6 years since it's been gone. So aside from just the changing of the laws on squatting in the Netherlands, the increasing conservatism of the government in Holland, in the Netherlands, I mean, but still people had been chipping away at that ownership issue for years. I don't know when was the last time you were in Amsterdam, but that place is just, when we lived there in the mid-90s, it was gritty. And the waters and the canal was soupy looking. And we loved it. It was very urban and gritty. But now, you know what? It looks like a sugar cookie. There's not a speck of property that's not worth a bazillion dollars anymore. And that's what is the impetus to get people out of the housing. But the thing is, from what I understand, the government's not making any provision for the people that aren't going to have a place to live. Our friends who still live in Het Krake, which is what it's called in Nederland, they all anticipate that they're going to lose their housing. And, you know, there isn't enough housing to go around.
Again, this is Sana.
And it's also a bit unreal for a lot of people. Like, I am already living for 7 years in the squad I live, and it's really hard to imagine for me that from now on I'm criminal, because that's what the law states. Like, everybody who's from the 1st of October, everybody who is in a squat is criminal. In theory, they can every moment come in and evict you and arrest you, and there's a maximum sentence of a year of prison, so that's quite high, especially for Dutch understandings. Burglary is a lower sentence. You see it coming, but still you don't really realize that it's real. And I think this has been the case for many people.
When you look at it, squatting, it's all about property. When is property valuable? When is it not? And sometimes some property that's worth nothing can be worth $1 million in 5 years or 10 years. And why? Is it because those bohemians moved in there and turned it into an arts district and everybody thought it was a hip place to live? There's so many ironies to real estate. To me, that's part of what happened with squatting in Amsterdam, is the pressure that the world had to look at this super livable place. I mean, Amsterdam, just like Portland, is considered to be a super livable place. And yet, you know, that livability it's temporary, because again, it's part of urban development. And just like we're seeing here in Portland, people are moving here because they read about it in Forbes magazine, or their auntie visited there and had this great beer 4 years ago. And there's not enough jobs for the people here. They can't afford the housing here. It's the same thing that happened in Amsterdam. Because to me, that's the real bottom line about squatting as an institution. It always existed, and it always will exist. And it might be temporary blip, but, you know, wherever you look, can just watch it happen. You can predict that it's going to happen, and you can predict when governments are going to shut it down too. Nederland's people are badass. They don't let people push them around, and they're very well educated. And a lot of stuff has happened in the world since 9/11. 9/11 did change the world in the worst possible way. And in a way, when you look at squatting, the squatting movement in Amsterdam, the community around it, I think a lot of people in Amsterdam specifically are probably really disgusted by the gentrification of it. Probably there's a lot of working class people, a lot of people who had lived there traditionally because their families owned houses and they're blue collar people, shopkeepers or business people. The Nederlands culture is, it's all about business. I mean, going way back, Dutch East India Company, I don't even have to go there, you know. So I think a lot of people are horrified at the gentrification and the cost of living because they don't know where their kids are going to live, right? But the bigger issue, I think, of what's happening in Holland is the push to the rightward of their government, because they've done other things that are a bit shocking as well. But the bigger issue is, you know, the bigger trend of the increasing conservatism, I think, of the Nederlands political system, and this issue of racism. You know, people have been dislodged all over the planet since 9/11, in part because of wars that we created in the United States. And probably a lot of people don't think that much about it, but, you know, we bombed the Middle East. There's a lot of people in North Africa who were displaced by that. There is that impacted other parts of the world. And so where do people go? Where can they go? A lot of people have gone to Italy. Italy is just drowning right now. It has no idea what to do with the people that are escaping to get to Italy. And, you know, huge issues there. In southern France also, we lived there for a while. Southern France has always had a terrorist problem. When we lived there in the mid-90s, you could never even find a public trash can because there were three active terrorist groups currently bombing stuff there. We don't even think twice about that. We don't even, you know, we act like it's all about us. But, you know, we dislodge people with our wars all over the planet, and it affects other countries that we may never have even seen and ways that we don't even talk about. So to me, I feel as though some of the militarization, some of the things that the United States has done, even in our drug laws, has had an impact on Amsterdam.
That was Lisa Loving, Portland area journalist and longtime radio producer. You can currently hear her regularly here at KBOO on the Wednesday morning talk radio program. We return to our interview with Sana, a current squatter in Amsterdam. This interview was conducted on Thursday, October 28th.
Have there been any evictions since we talked to you last?
Yes. For example, in Amsterdam, squatters have been so well organized that most of the time to evict a building is not that easy for them. So what they do is they do it in these eviction waves, and they need all their material, their specialists, people who can break through barricades or cut open barricaded doors, etc., etc. So in most cases, they won't try it even with normal police. But, of course, in smaller villages, this is a different story. In smaller villages, it's often just a handful of squatters. They live also not such a well-barricaded squat because it's often also not necessary in that way, or at least they have just a whole different relationship towards squatting and towards their neighbors, etc. So what happens now is that in smaller towns you see that either the police will evict with just a couple of regular cops, and well, they have the power to do that in these places because there's not enough people to resist this or to try to hold the eviction. In the smaller village, there's one or two squats evicted now by the police since the new law, and I'm talking outside of Amsterdam, and there is one squat also evicted by the owner, who just came with a shovel and some heavy men, and they just kind of started to demolish the building while the people were still in there. And since you are now criminal by law, of course, it doesn't make much sense to call the police in such instances. And this is a kind of protection that squatters used to have because they had this domestic peace, which they don't have anymore. So that changes the situation for a lot of people. And, of course, it's very nasty when you wake up while your house is being demolished. So this is what owners also try because, of course, they know about the new law. They're also taking action on that if they're really keen to remove squatters from their premises. Then in Amsterdam, the only building that's evicted so far is a building that has been squatted 3 years ago, 2007, as an action squat against the new squat ban that was already then an issue. It was a very strange glass building over the highway. So all the cars that would go every day in and out of Amsterdam from work to home would pass that glass kind of bridge building over the ring highway of Amsterdam. So it was a really nice place to put banners, and it was a very interesting building. But it was in a quite far out neighborhood, far away from the city center. The squatters got approached by people from the neighborhood who wanted to start kind of a neighborhood center there. So it was handed over to this neighborhood center, and in the end, two people from this neighborhood center started to be a mosque, a squatted mosque, with service being held there. So these people were a bit, you could say, outside of the infrastructure of the organized squat scene, even though there has been people helping them out before with juridical questions, etc. But still, they're a bit outsiders compared to many other buildings who are a bit more connected also through social centers, etc. This squat mosque was evicted last week with also normal police. There was not many people inside because they didn't live there. They only used it as a mosque. So, yeah, not much happened to resist it. And of course, people tried to, support the people there. But I think since it was bought by the fitness or sports school on the opposite of the road, and they kind of demanded the eviction, they didn't want to cause too much trouble. So they decided to just leave it with that, and didn't want much action to be taken from anybody after that eviction. And now we're hearing from several towns that a friend of mine, for example, she comes from Haarlem, a town here in not so far from Amsterdam, and the police was in front of her door yesterday to say that she will be evicted in a couple of weeks, and to give this notice, I guess, to hope that people kind of disappear automatically. So you see, obviously, that police is taking slowly, they're starting to take more action, and also house owners are starting to take more action. They're starting to file charges if this hasn't been done before, or to ask the police to evict, and so on. So now we really see this law is really slowly starting to work out in reality. And yeah, we're still kind of waiting for the first big eviction wave because we expected it last Tuesday. The mayor and the police said that they wanted to study the verdict of the court case. Personally, I really wonder why they would want to have to study it for such a long time, because it's quite clear that it's not a very complicated court case and they won. So, but still, I guess, well, maybe they're also still figuring out, because nobody really knows what's up and how it will work. And I think especially for Amsterdam, they know they have they're gonna get problems if they start with this eviction wave. So I think they want to be well prepared and look if they can somehow choose for some kind of de-escalation in the process, and so on. Still, this mayor, as I explained last time, this mayor is a bit different from what we're used to. So we're still kind of waiting how it will work out in his case. of course, we're not passively waiting. There's also all kinds of actions being organized throughout the country, which is quite positive. And also yesterday, there was a squatting action somewhere in the country, but it's still kept a bit secret because, of course, now it's a criminal offense and people want to see what happens if they kind of try to silently squat a building and prepare by barricading, etc., to not be immediately evicted. And yeah, just waiting. How the police will react on these newly squatted buildings that are squatted after the squatting ban. People are preparing squatting actions, but of course this is something we have to change our practice. So it's something it's prepared very well and with a big community and organization. And also, of course, if you squat buildings right after this law, you want it to be a good story. Every empty building is in a way a good story, but some empty buildings have a bit of a better story, with which I mean that the story really shows the situation with the housing shortage and the problematic side of housing in the Netherlands. And if you can pick a building that really is a good example of how the housing issue is really failing to provide people with decent housing here, or the housing policy is really failing to provide people with decent housing, then yeah, it's a better story for the press. It will be harder, or at least the mayor will look bad if he will evict it, especially when afterwards it will become vacant again. So these are things that people are preparing well and really try to show how squatting is still legitimate even though it's prohibited. It's not always that easy because you're always organizing around something which is a basic need, and always there's different interests at stake. There's the political campaign at stake, for which it's sometimes certain choices are better, and sometimes to just be able to remain living somewhere, other choices might be better. It's always problematic, and also it's sometimes hard to see this long-term view. For example, we had a squat meeting with all the squat of the city, and the issue was raised if people should accept contracts. If, for example, now 70% of the squats would accept a temporary, very bad contract, which doesn't give them any housing rights, but just gives them a very temporary solution and on an immediate basis being safe from eviction. Of course, this is something people are attempting to do this. But at the other hand, if, like I say, 70% of the squats do it, then there's only 30% left to fight and to continue the struggle and to go on, who don't have this interest of being good because of the contract. And then it becomes more easy overall to evict all the squats because there will be less to evict. The other squats will also disappear. Somebody said, like, for me, such contracts are actually the same as an eviction. And I don't think that's completely true, but I understand what he meant, that it means that you're not longer part of that community and not part of the same fight, which we have to find a solution for, and which we are doing, because of course it's also possible to say, hey, in your case, it's a wonderful chance if there's a very good contract, which is not very likely, but if you get a very good contract with good social housing rights, then why not? But, well, at least keep on fighting with us, or maybe there's a possibility that you, since you have this safe haven now, can provide us with certain infrastructure that we need, or a place to shower once in a while, and so on. And I think, yeah, people are still having this strong sense that it's very important now to close ranks and to stand together and to help each other out. Also, the legalized, the places that used to be squatted a long time ago and got, as we call it, legalized, so they got an official contract or they could buy the place. They also still feel this affinity with the squat movement and now are feeling that they also have kind of a duty, maybe, or at least a responsibility to help out in this fight. It's always good to try to organize as many different people as possible and stick together, even though it's not always possible to prevent eviction, for example, in the case of the mosque, which was, of course, a shame. You also have to respect the choices of people who live there and who will have to deal with the neighborhood at a later point as well and the community.
You are listening to an interview with Sana, an Amsterdam squatter, here on Circle A Radio. We asked her about the response of people who do not squat about the Netherlands squatting ban.
Most of the time, more left or liberal-orientated people understand squatting very well and they find the squatting ban quite ridiculous. And more conservative people are happy that finally the squatting ban is being allowed. The opinion has shifted towards squatting. It's more negative, but as always, when you talk to people in person, they kind of always understand in the end. I think there's still quite some solidarity. They haven't been doing one of these polls recently, but the last poll there was, I think, 70% or something of people in the city of Amsterdam supported squatting. And yeah, most people were not really into this squatting ban at all, and also realized that it will bring people in a position where they will maybe radicalize, or it will cause more problems than it offers any solution. And then again, especially in a place like Amsterdam and also throughout all Holland, many people have experiences with paying too much rent, too expensive housing, the shortage of housing, etc. So either that makes them understand better, or that makes them say, well, I also have to pay a lot of rent, so why wouldn't you have to pay it as well? It really depends. But as I said, most of the time when you talk to persons on a personal level, face-to-face level, they understand it. The problem is that not on any issue Dutch society on this moment is very speaking out a lot, so also not much about squatting. You can't say that there's masses on the streets demonstrating against this squatting ban, and it's mostly our kind of scene or movement and the people who are a bit more directly connected to it. But it's not a, I mean, it's not a thing that's quite that's far away from people. They still kind of understand it. So I think you just need to reinvest in your campaigning and make this story a bit clearer again, because somewhere it got a bit lost, I think, for some people. The housing shortage is still there, and the housing need is still as big. So the story is kind of still the same. And there's still a lot of buildings empty, especially office places. And now, because of the crisis, it's also interesting that there's a lot of building projects that are put on hold. So you have all these places that were on the list to be demolished and are already empty and put wooden things in front of them. But since the building projects are put on hold, nothing's going to happen with that for a while. And, of course, this is also not something that people like to see in their neighborhoods. So I definitely see chances of reviving the idea of squatting and the sympathy with squatting, and that people will realize that it's not such a strange idea of weird, alternatively dressed, foreign, etc. people that they don't feel any connection to. But we'll see also about that. Well, I would do a call out to everybody just to squat a building in the sport of squatting in the Netherlands, and also to offer a direct solution for your housing needs wherever you are. That's always the best actions, I would say. And for the rest, I think mostly we are having a huge demonstration again the 13th of November with a lot of renter associations and other groups that have the same problem with housing needs and also homeless associations, etc. So that's going to be for sure interesting. I guess it's a very Dutch demonstration in a sense. Anybody in the neighborhood during the time of January, there will be some action days, and this will also be mobilized for widely and posted on several international indie medias, if that's known to people. Yeah, maybe you can also visit the embassy of Holland, if there's one in your city, and you can do a picket line or just hang a banner on it with a squat sign or something. It's showing solidarity with squatters in Holland.
The contact information for the Netherlands Consulate in Portland is portland@ncla.org. They can also be reached by phone at 503-222-7957. Special thanks to our guests, Sana and Lisa Loving. Circle A Radio can be heard on the first and third Wednesdays here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. We can be contacted through the KBOO website at kboo.fm/Circle A Radio, where you can hear many of our past shows. We can also be contacted at circlearadio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.